Good morning, everyone. Welcome to 3 Ideas in 30 Minutes, our opportunity to share some fantastic and inspirational ideas to get us ready for Shabbos, to prepare us for meaningful conversations at our Shabbos table. You'll notice my background this morning, because for those of you who are not living in Boca, it is cold and rainy. Obviously, cold is a subjective word when you're talking about Florida, but it's one of those mornings where you get out of bed and you say to yourself, I'd rather be back in bed. But here we are, learning Torah, Baruch Hashem, just gives us each more schar for coming out and for learning. I want to thank, as always, our sponsor for this morning, anonymously in memory of Teddy Kellen, Shimon Tuvia Ben, Dov Yehuda Leib Chaim. Our learning should be in Aliyah for his neshama. Parshas Toldos, here we go, 3 ideas in 30 minutes. Where do we start? We're going to start with probably the less focused on part of the Parsha, which is Yitzchak's interactions living with the Plishtim. Of course, Yitzchak is driven from Gerar. He finds himself with trouble with the local Plishtim shepherds who claim that the wells that Yitzchak had dug really belong to them. The Torah tells us each one of the wells and gives it a name for us. And so for the first two wells, whose ownership was really contested by the Plishtim, so the Torah tells us they were named Asek, which means struggle or controversy, and Sitna. Sitna means enmity, hatred. The third well, which does not meet any protest or any contention whatsoever, Yitzchak names Rechovot. Rechovot means expansion, prosperity, blessings, all types of good things. There's a whole drush in and of itself. Why it is that third well is successful, whereas the first two are not. I am not going to make that one of the three ideas this morning, but I encourage you to look at the text very carefully. And if you look at the text, this Shabbos very carefully, you will notice exactly what is the fundamental difference between Yitzchak's relationship with the first two wells and Yitzchak's relationships with the third well. That is not our idea this morning. The question is, what about the names? What is the significance of Asek and Sitna and Rechovot? So the Ramban famously tells us that these are a reference to the three Batei Mikdashos, the three Beis HaMikdash. The first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash are going to be destroyed. They are the ones that are met with enmity and hostility, whereas the third Beis HaMikdash is going to last eternally. It's going to bring in a peace, a time of peace and prosperity for the entire Jewish people, and that's why that third Beis HaMikdash is, or that third well, is referred to as Rechovot. I want to share with you a beautiful Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar says that there is a further significance to the terms Asek and Sitna. What is the difference, after all, between the words Asek, which means struggle, controversy, and Sitna? They sound very, very similar. So the Kli Yakar says that it also refers to the Batei Mikdashos, but it refers to the difference between the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash. Says the Kli Yakar that whereas Asek refers to big forms of hostility, for example, hostility that exists between generals, hostility that exists between monarchies, when two kingdoms or two countries come together and they're battling over territory, when they're battling over resources, when they're battling over prominence, all of that, says the Kli Yakar, that is under the category of Asek. So two countries go to war, that's Asek. Two countries are fighting over territory, that's Asek. Two countries are fighting over the same landmass, they each want the rights to the oil that's underneath there, that is Asek. Says the Kli Yakar, Sitna is different. Sitna does not refer to countries battling one another. Rather, Sitna refers to what he calls, or he characterizes, as petty quarreling and trivial and insignificant matters. So the guy didn't smile at me this morning. The guy behind me in line at Publix had a dog that kept on barking at me. That, right? The silly little things, that which are trivial and insignificant, and yet we know more often than not people fight all the time over, whether it's neighbors fighting with one another, whether it's family fighting with one another, whether it's the guy next to you in shul is davening a Shmona Esrei a little bit louder or a little bit fast, and you get all in a tizzy over it. That, says the Kli Yakar, is Sitna. And so the story of Yitzchak's wells, and this is our first idea, alludes to two different types of conflict that we have to be avoiding. One is Asek, and one is Sitna. On the one hand, of course, we're all familiar that we have to avoid Asek. We have to avoid controversies that surround major issues. And we have to learn to handle them in a peaceful way, in a calm way, in a level-headed way. I was talking to a communal leader last night. He said that and when he looks for a lay leader, that is the number one criteria that he looks for, more than financial acumen and more than ability to communicate to people. He said it's got to be someone who's not going to get caught up in the controversies, who's going to be handling things with peacefully, who's going to be able to take a step back and remove himself from situations and think of it strategically. He said that's the number one criteria. That's ASEC. That's those big ideas, right? It's when countries go to battle against each other. It's when kingdoms fight over territory. And it's major issues. Sometimes there are significant major issues, even within our communities. But says the Kli Yakar, there's another type of conflict that you and I have to work hard to avoid. And that is what he calls sitna. That senseless, childish bickering over silly little things, oftentimes, that ruin relationships. He didn't call me on my birthday. I'm never speaking to him again. What a chutzpah, terrible, I'm never speaking to him again. Right, she parked her car right behind my driveway so that I couldn't back out properly. What neighbors do I have? Terrible, right? Silly things. And if I told you, if you're laughing at home and you're saying, this really doesn't happen, happens every day. Trust me, it comes to me. Happens every day. People get in petty little quarrels and it ruins relationships. How many families that haven't spoken to each other for years? Why? Because at one Thanksgiving meal 10 years ago, she looked at me cross-eyed. Because, right? Asek and Sitna, says the Kli Yakar, what the wells of Yitzchak are there to teach us is to not just avoid conflict, but to avoid two very different types of conflict. Conflict number one is the Asek, the big ideas. Of course, we have to separate ourselves from major issues and major concerns. We have to learn to approach it in a peaceful way, in a level-headed way, in a way that avoids machlokas, but we also have to avoid sitna. We also have to avoid that childish, trivial, insignificant bickering, which can also times lead to ruining families, lead to ruining communities, lead to ruining institutions. That is the lesson, says the Kli Yakar, of Yitzchak's wells. Okay, idea number two comes from the Sfas Emes. Now, this Sfas Emes I actually saw in Shul last night as I was preparing for what to say between Mincha Maariv, and I said to myself, can't use that now. Gotta save that for three ideas. So we know that after Yitzchak gives Yaakov the bracha, so he says, come close to me, smells him, and he gives him a bracha. And what's the bracha that he gives him? V'yitein lecha ha'elohim mitala shamayim u'mishmane ha'aretz v'rov dagan v'sirosh Yitzchak. And again, this could be a conversation in and of itself, but it is a little strange that Yitzchak, when he gives the blessing to Yaakov, what is the nature of the blessing? So the nature of the blessing is a very physical blessing, right? Hashem is going to give you the dew of the heaven, mishmane ha'aretz, the fat of the earth, v'rov dagan v'sirosh, wine, grain. Now, of course, we daven for this in our in Shema. That is the second paragraph of Shema. You'll notice here that I think what the Sfas Emes is really asking is, isn't that a strange blessing to give him? Bless him for spiritual success. Bless him that he should feel connection to Hashem. What is this that he says he should have great? You know what, Yaakov, even though I think you're Esav, I'm going to give you the greatest bracha in the world. Right? What parent of a bar bat mitzvah kid gets up there and says, I'm going to give you a bracha right now, Chaim Yankel, that may you grow up to enjoy the finest wines and to have the most delicious steak dinners. Right? Name me one parent. I've been to a lot of simchas. I cannot think of one simcha where the parent got up there and said, my bracha to you is you should have the finest wines and scotches. That's exactly what Yitzchak tells Yaakov. V'yitin lecha Elohim, mishtal ha'shamayim, mishmanei arz, v'rov dagam v'sirosh. He says, I want you to be the wealthiest guy in the world. That sometimes you hear. I want you to be the wealthiest guy in the world, enjoy the finest wines and the nicest steaks. What is going on here? So the Medrash says on this pasuk, v'yitin lecha, what is ha'elohim? Right? So we translate it as, God should give you. But that's not really what the Medrash says it means. V'yitin lecha elokusa, that Hashem should give you from his elokus. Hashem should give you from his godliness. That says the Medrash. Ask the Sfas Emes, what does that mean? that Hashem should give you from his godliness. Says the Sfas Emes that what it really should read is Ve'yitein lecha es ha'elokim, that Hashem should give you God. What does that mean? And if Hashem is giving God, why is that manifested through bounty and abundance and fine wines and grains? What is going on in this pasuk? Now we say this pasuk. Some of us say this pasuk. This is a pasuk that you'll notice at the end of Marv on Motzei Shabbos. We've referenced this tefillah in the past, usually because of the end of the tefillah. But there's a prayer called Ve'yitein lecha. Right after Vihi Noam, many shuls have a custom of saying Ve'yitein lecha. It's a beautiful prayer, right? It takes a little bit of time. It's a lot of psukim, but it's a beautiful prayer. And essentially, it's a collection of brachos that appear throughout Tanakh, and we collect them in one place. And the whole idea is that as we start our new week, we want to be surrounded by an abundance of blessing. And it starts, Ve'yitein lecha, with this pasuk. Ha'elokim mital ha'shamayim mishmana ha'aretz v'rov dagam v'sirosh. What does it mean? It's so out of place. Listen to this Sfas Emes. He says the bracha really was, Lios ish Yisrael mikabel Elohus mikol advarim. The bracha that Yitzchak gave to Yaakov is that he should find God in everything. Right? Mikabel Elohus mikol advarim. That he should find sanctity in Kedusha, that he should see God in everything. Even mital ha'shamayim mishmanei aretz v'rov dagam v'sirosh, even in the most physical elements of our lives. Food and wine and financial success. We should see God, says the Sfas Emes, in every single one of us. Ki kol ma shebara HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because everything that Hashem created in this world, lichvodo bara, Hashem created it to give honor to Him. So whether it's everything from a computer screen to wine to grain to you name it, everything, says the Sfas Emes, that you and I encounter is a mechanism, is a conduit through which we can experience the Ribono Shel Olam. Ve'abracha sheyimsa adam elokuso yisbarach shemo b'chol makom. And the bracha that Yitzchak was really giving Yaakov is that as you're about to go out into the real world, and you're about to go out into the workforce, and you're going to be, right? Find God in everything. V'niskayim achar kach b'kabal satorah anochi Hashem elokecha. Okay. What a beautiful Sfas Emes. Beautiful Sfas Emes. The bracha of Yitein Lecha Ha'elohim. Right? It's not that God should give you, but that you should be given God. You should be given the bracha to find God. Where? Of course, to find God in Shul. Of course, to find God in the base medrash. But you know what the real bracha is? Mital ha'shamayim mishmanei aretz v'rov dagam v'sirosh. In even the most physical parts of your life, to be able to find God everywhere. That, says the Sfas Emes, is what the bracha that Yitzchak gave to Yaakov was. Yitzchak gave Yaakov a bracha that is so relevant to every single one of us. And it's so relevant on Motzei Shabbos, by the way, also. As we're leaving Shabbos, and we're about to go out into the week, filled with obligations and responsibilities, and we live in a very physical world. And so what is the bracha we daven to Hashem for? We say, Hashem, v'yitin lecha elokim mital ha'shamayim. Hashem, let me find you in everything. Let me find you in the doctor's office. Let me find you in Publix. Let me find you in the gym. Let me find you when I'm sitting with a client. Let me find, whatever I'm doing, let me sanctify and be able to find you. So whether it's a bottle of wine, which sometimes can have crass connotations, right? People get drunk over, they misuse. We know that we sanctify wine. We use it for Kiddush. We use it for Havdalah. Or a grain, which is an abundance. Again, think about how many people have gone astray over the years because they focus too much on their material possessions. And yet we know that we take the most basic of those material possessions, grain, and we sanctify it. It becomes challah. It becomes a hamotzi. It becomes something that satiates us and allows us to serve the Ribono Shel Olam. And so says the Sfas Emes, that what we're really saying is Yitzchak says to Yaakov that you should be an ish mekabel elokuso mikol dvarim. You should be a person who receives God in everything that you do, who's zoche to see God and to find God and to create a relationship with God in everything that you do. Because everything Hashem created for us in this world is for one purpose, and that's to be able to find Him and to be able to develop a relationship with Him. and to be able to give him honor through that relationship. Ve'abracha sheyimatze Adam, right? Sheyimatze Elokuso b'chol makom. That we should find God everywhere and at every time and every place. That is an astounding Sfas Emes. The idea is not astounding. The idea is beautiful. But the reading of it into the Pasuk is gorgeous. V'yitin lecha ha'elokim. We should be given God, even mitala shamayim mishman eretz verov dagam v'sirosh. We should be given the opportunity to find God, even in the most basic physical parts of our lives. That is where we should be zochet to find God. It's a very Hasidic idea. It's an idea you'll see oftentimes in the writings of the Sfas Emes, but I think it's such a beautiful reading of the Pasuk. I think it gives us an understanding of exactly what it is that Yitzchak was blessing Yaakov from. I think it is a very beautiful bracha of something that we should say on Motzei Shabbos, as we're going out into the week and we're going to be surrounded, right? We're leaving the Kiddush of Shabbos, we're leaving our Neshama Yaseir behind, and yet we come to Hashem and we say, Hashem, may I find you everywhere this week? Everywhere, when I'm doing homework with my kids, when I'm helping out my grandkids, I should find you. I should see the beauty in that. When I'm going for a walk, when I'm going for a run, when I'm going to the gym, I should find you in that, Hashem. Everywhere I look, at every time and in every circumstance, Hashem, Yehi Ratzon, that V'yitein Lecha Elokim, that may I have the ability, the siyata d'shmaya, to be able to find you. I think it's a gorgeous idea. So idea number one came from the Kli Yakar, the difference between Asek and Sitna. We have to avoid fighting. We have to avoid big fights, and we have to avoid petty, childish bickering that we know ruins relationships, undermines communities, and destroys institutions. We have to stay away from that like the plague. Idea number two came from this gorgeous Sfas Emes, V'yitin Lecha Ha'elokim, Mitala Shamayim Verov Dagam Sirosh, something to think about as we leave the Kedush of Shabbos, go back into the week, what exactly we're davening to Hashem for. Hopefully some of you will pay attention to that V'yitin Lecha, you'll notice it in your Siddur, and even if you can't say all of it each week, say a little bit each week, it definitely starts your week off on the right foot. Idea number three is one of my favorite ideas on the Parsha. Could be I've shared in the past, I don't remember. But even if I have, it is worth repeating. That's how beautiful I think the idea is. Again, it is such a strange opening to the Parsha. Let me read for you the opening of the Parsha. Eila toldos Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram ol yides Yitzchak. This is the story of Yitzchak. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. We know Chazal have a lot to say about that. It seems a little bit redundant. Then the next pasuk. Yitzchak is 40 years old when he marries Rivka. Oh, and who is Rivka? Bas Bisuel Arami, Mi Padan Aram, Achos Lavan Arami, Lolisha. She happens to be the daughter of Bisuel, the Aram from Padan Aram, the sister of Lavan, the Armenian. Wait a second. Time out. We just had an entire Parsha about this. The bulk of Parsha's Chayisar was telling us about exactly where Rivka was born. We learn a lot about Bisuel, and we learn a lot about Lavan, and we get to know them pretty well in last week's Parsha. Why does this week's Parsha have to open up, reminding us exactly where Rivka's from? Don't I know that already from last week's Parsha? And then, with that introduction, we're told that Rivka didn't have children, and that Yitzchak davens on her behalf. And then, all of a sudden, she's pregnant, and she hears rumbling in her stomach. Vatomer, and she says, "Im kein lama ze anochi," right? If I'm having these pains, these pregnancy pains, so then what's the purpose of all of it? Why am I even alive? So she goes to Hashem, and instead of Hashem giving her the answer that you and I would have expected Hashem to give, right? A woman comes to you. Any doctors here? I'll pick on someone here, right? If a woman comes to you and says, "You know, Rabbi, I'm 8 months pregnant, and I'm much larger than my other pregnancies, and my stomach's killing," right? So what would you say? You'd say, "Okay, well, now we have ultrasounds," right? But you would answer the patient. And after the ultrasound, you say, "You're having twins." Why doesn't Hashem just say, "You're having twins"? Rivka comes and she says, "Vayitrotesua bani mekara." She's having that bumbling in her stomach, right? She's having that indigestion, whatever. And she comes to Hashem, and Hashem says, instead of, "Oh, by the way, you're having twins," Hashem goes into this long prophecy that not only are there two nations in your womb, but they're going to be fighting with one another, and the young one and the old one. What in the world is going on here? Why do we have the introduction of the Parsha? We know exactly who Rivka is. Why, when Rivka encounters pregnancy pains, does she immediately say to herself, like, Im Kein Lama Ze Anochi, what's all this about? She's been infertile for so many years. You think at that point someone would be complaining about a little pain in her stomach? Lama Ze Anochi? No, you would say, okay, right? I've waited for this. It's worth it. I'll tolerate it. And then what's Hashem's answer? The prophecy, the two. Just say you're having twins, Rivka. It's okay. They're going to come out and you'll stop having this pain in your stomach. What in the world is going on? I want to share with you a magnificent, gorgeous interpretation from Rav Tzvi Dov Kanatopsky in his book, Night of Watching. Rav Kanatopsky, of course, was a Rav in, I believe, Brooklyn. Died at a very young age, but they said he was like the up-and-coming rabbi. People I know, I've quoted him in Shirim. Many people used to daven at his shul, and they tell me amazing things about him. Very tragic death. Says Rabbi Kanatopsky, the most amazing vort. He says, Rivka wasn't doubting whether or not she should be pregnant. And it was when she says, Im Kein Lama Ze Anochi, she wasn't saying like, why me? What she was saying is whether or not she should be pregnant. Her, Rivka, should she be the one who's pregnant? What does that mean? So if you think about it, put yourself in Rivka's shoes. We take for granted that Rivka is a tzaddikas, and that even though she was born up in the house of Besuel and Lavan in a decrepit society, all of a sudden she transitions seamlessly into the house of Avram and Yitzchak, and it's all hunky-dory. But you and I know, anyone certainly on this chat who has a son-in-law or a daughter-in-law or machatanim, right? So you know that it's not always so easy to blend families, right? No matter how perfect the shidduch is, no matter how much is inve'agefen, it's hard. People come from different backgrounds, right? My wife and I come from very different cultures. She's like Hungarian Brooklyn, and I'm like apple pie 4th of July Boston. Okay, so it was, I was a Baruch Hashem, we have a, you know, but it was definitely like when I, you know, came out in red, white, and blue on July 4th, she wanted to have a heart attack. And when, you know, my mother-in-law, like the chandeliers, right? So it's not always so easy. So put yourself in Rivka's shoes, right? I love my in-laws, I'm just joking, right? I was just using a Hungarian stereotype. Okay, I don't need the phone call afterwards, right? So it's very hard sometimes. Now put yourself in Rivka's shoes, right? Rivka comes from a different world than Avram and Yitzchak. She's heard a lot about Avram and Yitzchak. They are like the Rashi Yeshiva. They are, think about what they accomplished. And then think about who Rivka was. She came from a lowly family. A family not of particular prestige. A family of evil people. And so all of a sudden, she's marrying in to the most famous family in the world. Picture, Lahavdil, Kate marrying William. Right? How did she feel? A commoner is marrying in to royalty. So I've never met her, but I would imagine that she was a bit nervous marrying into the most famous families in the world as a total outsider from a different society, a different culture, a different upbringing. Imagine how nervous she should have been. Right? Everyone knows that Avram's the guy. And everyone knows that Avram gets a promise that it's through his children, that in their children and their children, that this great nation is going to be born. And what happens all of a sudden, right? All of a sudden, Rivka can't have children. Rivka can't have children. And all of a sudden, she says to herself, wait a second, maybe I'm not worthy. Maybe the reason why I can't have these children is because I'm not the one. Because I come from Besuel and Achot Lavan Ha'arami, she says to herself, I'm from an outside land, a place of idols. Her uncle is a deceitful liar. Not good yichus. And yet she's chosen. And all of a sudden, things don't work out the way that they're supposed to work out. She knows this doesn't happen to Sarah, who is much older than she is. And now Rivka becomes extremely troubled. She has an existential crisis about her life and who she is and whether she's the right one for this position. So what does she do? Vatelech lidroses Hashem. She goes and she asks God a question. And she says, God, im kein lama ze anochi? Am I the person? She doesn't want to know about her pains. She doesn't want to know about how much weight she gained during pregnancy. What she wants to know is, Lama ze anochi? Hashem, am I the guy or not? Why was I chosen? What do I have to offer? What do I have to contribute? Why would the lineage of the great Avram be passed down through me? Now we understand Hashem's answer. Because Hashem's answer is not, you're just going to have twins. That wasn't her question. But Hashem comes and says, Mipadana Rama Achos Lavan, that your lineage is not your weakest point, but it's actually your strongest asset. Because we know that Rivka's growing up in the house of Lavan and Besuel actually enables so much of the story of Parshas Toldos. The trickery, the ability to deceive Yitzchak, it all happens because Rivka was a little bit of an outsider. Because she understood a little bit how different societies worked. And so it wasn't her weakness, but it was actually specifically the attribute that Hashem was looking for in a spouse to Yitzchak Avinu. It is such a beautiful idea. It is such a beautiful idea about an inferiority complex, about sometimes a sense of self-doubt of why me and who am I and what am I doing here? And Hashem, this was supposed to be easy and there's stumbling blocks in my way. And sometimes we too have those existential moments where we come to Hashem, we say, Im kein lama ze anochi. I spoke to a guy the other week, Baal Tshuva, gave up so much, struggling to pay yeshiva tuition. If you think about it, when you go from public school to day school, the financial strain that puts on you and your family and the things you can no longer do that you once were used to doing and the sacrifice that you make for Jewish education. And then his child struggling a little bit in the Jewish day school, and he came to me and he basically said these words, Im kein lama ze anochi. Like, am I doing the right thing? Am I the guy? Am I failing my children in some way? And so Hashem comes back and says, you gotta play the long game. Gotta play the long game. That sometimes what you view as your biggest weakness ends up being your biggest strength. And sometimes the struggles and the adversity and the challenges that we go over, that we go through in life, that appear like momentous challenges in that moment, actually brings out an attribute of us, something within us, that allows us to be much more successful in the long run. What does Rivka not do? Rivka does not quit on God. The Ramban points this out. Rivka does not quit on God. She doesn't get frustrated and question and say, you know what, I'm out of here. What does she do? Vatelech lidroses Hashem. Says the Ramban, what does the word lidrosh mean? It means lehit palel. She dive into Hashem. And those, when we have those moments of doubt, when we have those moments where we question our shlichut in this world and what it is that we're supposed to accomplish, and we go through those moments of adversity and existential crisis and challenges, we don't give up. Vatelech lidrosh es Hashem. We dive into the Ribono Shel Olam. And we say, Hashem, I'm doing my best and I'm putting in my effort. And sometimes I wonder, is this what you want from me? And am I the right guy for the job? And am I doing what you asked for me? That is Vatelech Lidros Es Hashem. It's a beautiful reading of Rav Tzvi Dov Kanatovsky. Think about it, the Shabbos, read it into the Psukim. It's even more beautiful even than I could do justice for in these few short minutes. So we saw three ideas in 30 minutes. We saw the idea of the Kli Yakar, the difference between Asek and Sitna. We have to avoid fighting. We have to avoid significant fights, and there are legitimate issues that we debate. We always have to do it in a peaceful way, in a level-headed way, and we have to really avoid those trivial, insignificant, childish bickering which can destroy relationships and communities and institutions. Idea number two we saw from the beautiful Sfas Emes, V'yitein lecha ha'elokim, that the bracha that Yitzchak gave Yaakov was God. You should be zocha to find God in everything, and in everywhere and in everything that you do. What a beautiful prayer for us to say on Motzei Shabbos, as we're leaving the Kiddush of Shabbos, and we're going into the week to say to ourselves, Hashem, whatever it is you're going to throw at me this week, and all of my roles and all my obligations, may I be zocha to find you in everything. May I be zocha to create that relationship with you in everything that I do. And idea number three was this beautiful idea, Rosito Karatovsky, this reading of the introduction to our parsha, Vatelech Lidros as Hashem, Im kein lama ze anochi. Maybe I'm not the right person. Rivka has an existential inferiority complex. She is Kate to William. She says, maybe I'm not the right person. And Hashem comes back and says, no, you're exactly who I need. And what you perceive sometimes as your weakness, if you transition it, if you utilize it properly, it becomes your greatest strength, but it's all based on Vatelech Lidrosh Hashem. We have to dive into Hashem when we have those moments of doubt, when we struggle a little bit, when we have a little bit of those existential crises, we dive into Hashem. Hashem, please give me that clarity. Please give me that understanding that you gave to Rivka of why I need to go through those challenges and how I'm going to be better as a result. So we saw three ideas, 30 minutes. I want to wish everyone a beautiful, inspirational, and meaningful week. And we'll see you back here next week, same time, same place. Everyone have a beautiful Shabbos.